Good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, October 12th, 2017, and we are already past the midway point of another week in the NFL season. I can't believe it's already the middle of October.
Man, does it go fast.
It really does, and it started to get cold at practice all of a sudden.
I know.
We were, what, in the 60s or 70s last week, and now it was 59, according to the thermometer the Packers keep at practice, so I wasn't ready for it. You were in short sleeves. You were bold, Tom.
I don't give in to the cold until November. I refuse to turn the heat on in my home until November 1st.
But you're wearing jeans today.
That's
this is
true.
The first time you caved and didn't wear shorts.
You're right. So I guess I am kind of wimpy anyway. Everybody knew that already.
We'll be in Minnesota on Sunday. But before we get into this podcast, you got a little news to share.
Yeah. I'm a Tom. You didn't know that, did you?
No.
My significant other is a grandmother, and I'm a Tom since it's not my son who had the baby. But it was awesome, and they were part of this wildfire in California, and they had to be evacuated before the pregnancy while she was in labor. It's really crazy, and they're being featured in all kinds of stories all across country, including a story in the UK, which was really crazy. But I guess it was a big deal. But it's a big deal to me, and this Adrian VM is going to be under my tutelage very soon. We'll be working on the shortstop to the second base flip.
Okay.
It's always a thing that the little leaguers have to learn really early on. So.
And I've been told that if you have your children become long snappers, they can have lucrative careers.
I've got them down for long snapper, left-handed reliever, and three-point shooter.
There you go.
The number 12 spot.
There
on the
you
bench.
Go.
You know, I've always wanted to be a number 12 guy on the NBA bench. Never have to play.
No.
All I got to do is practice.
You can live very comfortably on the league minimum.
Heck yeah.
I would have no problem making the league minimum.
All right, let's talk about what everyone wants to talk about, the Packers.
All right,
and
so
the Vikings.
Let's start with the Bears Vikings game from Monday night. I watched about half of it before I gave in and went to sleep after not getting much sleep on the way back from Dallas. Sunday night. But what did you make of that game, and where do you think this Viking team stands relative to the last time these two teams played when they got their butts kicked here in December?
Well, you know what's funny? I was actually watching the Packer game again, doing my charting thing while I was watching the Bears-Vikings game. And the Bears-Viking game was so bad that it got interesting.
It was
that
atrocious.
I had to stop watching the Packer game and watch that game because it was just an abysmal show. I could not believe how bad Sam Bradford was and how injured he was.
I couldn't believe they put him out there.
I know. I was thinking of you, actually. I was like, this guy's got a bad knee. He can't move. It's just like Michael. So, man, there's not a lot to be learned from that game, except that the Vikings still have a good defense. Defense wins games, and they won with their defense. And Jerick McKinnon, who is now my new hero because I picked him up in fantasy the day before the game and started him, and he helped me win. So, what was your question?
where do you think this Vikings team is relative to the last time they came here and got destroyed? In that game, it was a pretty big blowout, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Thielen had 200 yards, and they still got blown out.
Yeah, and Jordy Nelson just went off in that game. I think Minnesota is better on the offensive line than they were.
Agreed.
I think their defense is still very good. I think their offense, their quarterback is, it's kind of... You know, Case Keenum is what he is. He's nothing great. I thought they were going to be a lot better team with Dalvin Cook, and that was a huge loss.
Enormous.
To lose him. He's a really good player.
He could have won Rookie of the Year. I mean, the way he was playing, the amount of touches he was getting, the success he was having.
Yeah.
I mean, even Zimmer on the conference call yesterday with, us Green Bay reporters said that that was a huge change for what they wanted to do offensively when you lose a guy like that. You know, behind them they have McKinnon, they have Latavius Murray. Neither guy is going to be able to do the same things that Cook did. But I still think overall, even with, you know, Keenum in there at quarterback, and even without Cook, I still think they're better than overall than when they were here last time.
I think they are. I think they are. I'd like to see how they're going to use those running backs, and also are they going to have Stephon Diggs?
Yeah, that's the big one.
I mean, to me, that's a huge one. And he, as you pointed out earlier, destroyed Demarius Randall in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And they're a whole different team there. Now, they lost to Detroit, but I think that was when Cook got hurt, wasn't it? Was that the game he got hurt in?
Boy, I can't remember. I think so.
I believe it was.
It sounds right.
And I don't think they really recovered from that. And, you know, Keenum's going to be like a game manager. He's going to not kill you, but you better have some other things going on with your running game and your defense. So,
yeah, and I mean,
that's where I think they are.
This defense is going to carry them as far as they go. It's sort of the inverse of the Packers, who have to drag their defense along at times. You know, this defense is going to win them games. And, you know, you look at what they have up front, I think that could pose a real challenge depending on who's available for the offensive line. And even if Bakhtiari's back at left tackle, Everson Griffin is no slouch, even if Bakhtiari's out there.
For a guy coming back for his first game,
yeah,
you know, to have Everson Griffin,
or
six
if they
sacks so
or,
far.
Or if they flip, take, you know, Danielle Hunter, just as dangerous.
Either way, yeah. I talked to Lane Taylor on Wednesday, and I got the sense that Bakhtiari was finally going to play, but we won't know that until Sunday. And if he does play, he's got to be rusty. He hasn't played
in
4 weeks.
Yeah,
and he's going to be playing silent count in probably the loudest stadium in the NFL.
Yep.
So I would expect him to have some issues with Griffin.
Don't forget, he hasn't played in 4 weeks. He hardly played at all in the exhibition season.
Mm-hmm.
So he essentially has played, what, one game since the NFC Championship game?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
going to be a lot to get used to.
And he's facing a really good player.
Yeah. And then you look at sort of the rest of the defense. I think that the weak point for me is I wonder if this is a game where Cobb can have some success. I mean, Terrence Newman is remarkable, but 38 years old in the slot, or 39, whatever he is, I mean, I just think that this is an opportunity. If Rodgers is forced to extend some plays, which I think there's a pretty good likelihood given the ferocity of the pass rush, I think Cobb could maybe sneak away from Newman at times in the way that you've talked about Cobb being best in sort of these scramble plays.
Could be. I just don't know if how much scrambling Rodgers is going to be able to do against this defense because they're so fast.
Okay.
And this might be a game where they try to actually win it running the ball. You know, we may see them go early with Aaron Jones and Ty Montgomery if Montgomery can play, and then work the tight ends a little bit, you know, so we'll see. But Rodgers, you don't want Rodgers scrambling a lot against this team because they will hit you, and they are fast.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Barr can run like no other, and Kendricks can
run, and
Harrison Smith.
Yeah, Harrison Smith will pop you. Sendejo will pop you. You know, they're a formidable group.
You mentioned the possibility of the Packers really trying to stick to the run, and in today's paper, I sort of wrote a little bit about how the perimeter players, tight ends and receivers, really helped the running game against Dallas. And, you know, when I went back and watched that, I thought in particular Kendricks had his best blocking game by far. You know, on the first drive alone, he stonewalls Tyrone Crawford alone by himself, giving up probably 45 pounds easy. Then he combines with Lane Taylor to stonewall Crawford again, and those two gains combined for 21 yards. Bennett was the backside blocker on the run by Jones that went for 22.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the final drive, when Bennett caught that screen pass, you had really good blocks from Cobb and Allison. Mm-hmm. And then on the draw play to Jones, Allison might have had the biggest block of the game, because if he doesn't block Anthony Brown on the perimeter, I don't know if Jones gets out of bounds. Mm. And if he doesn't get out of bounds, they have to use their timeout mm-hmm. early, and who knows how that shakes out. So basically, I just talked to those guys about, you know, how when the offensive line is still missing some parts, these guys on the perimeter can actually play a pretty significant role in the run game. And I think McCarthy said pretty much that that's going to have to be the case against the Vikings, because Harrison Smith and Sendejo are so dangerous against the run that you have to have all hands on deck to block them. Now, just generally, I know they had a good showing in Dallas, but what do you think of the skill players for the Packers when it comes to blockers? We know about Bennett, but aside from everybody else, can that be a strength?
Yeah. I think Nelson and Adams are good blockers. I think Nelson is exactly like he is as a receiver. He's fundamentally strong. He's going to get in front of the guy. He's not going to hold. He's going to know when to let go. He's going to use leverage properly. Adams has the potential to be really good because he's a big guy.
Yeah.
He's got those great feet. He doesn't always get – I don't think he's always as fundamentally sound as Nelson. Allison has the potential to be a great blocker.
I agree.
Because of his long reach.
And he seems willing, too, which is a big part of it.
He's kind of a tough guy, too. You know, he can really do some stuff in blocking. So, and Cobb is a willing blocker,
right,
not the best, but he'll go after it. He'll put his nose in there.
So let's talk about that running game a little bit. Now, we don't know where Montgomery's going to be by Sunday, but
right,
he did practice in full on Wednesday, which is the non-padded practice. So today will be the good indication of what he's able to do. I personally still think he doesn't play. But what do you think? Do you think we see a steady diet of Jones after what he did this past week?
I think either way we do. I think even if Montgomery is healthy or available, we'll see Jones. I want to see him on turf again. He's a turf runner, and he's got the ability to turn the corner. And again, this is another different animal. The Vikings,
no question,
holes close really quick, and they're pretty punishing. Sometimes you want a bigger back against them. But, you know, go with the hot hand. And Montgomery is yesterday's news for right now until Jones, you know, isn't effective. Then you know, and you can sprinkle in Montgomery. You need a change of pace. And who's to say they can't play Jones and Montgomery together in the backfield,
you know,
with Montgomery motioning out and becoming a wide receiver. So I do think Jones will get the bulk of the carries. And if Montgomery is down, then, you know, they have to think about how much do they want to use Jamal Williams.
You mean more than one carry for one yard like they did in Dallas?
Well, you know, it might be if Jones is running it like he did against the Cowboys.
To me, the biggest indication of success will be how much or how often the Packers linemen can get to the second level, because Kendricks and Barr can run so well that if the Packers O-line struggles with the D-line and they can't get to the second level, I think Jones is going to have some problems, because those guys can go sideline to sideline.
Well, the other thing is that they will bring their inside linebackers right up to the line of scrimmage.
That double A-gap stuff that Zimmer does.
Yeah, and they call that mugging, linebackers mugging. And they'll come in and they'll stand there, and you have to guess whether they're going to come or whether they're going to drop out. And because Rodgers does a lot of that run-pass option stuff, a lot of it falls on him to try to figure out what they're going to do. And running against that is tough, really tough. But if you can block that up, all of a sudden your guy's in the secondary, because those guys are up on the line of scrimmage, those linebackers, and the next thing you know, you're in the secondary. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how they attack that. Either way, I think this will not be one of those games where the Packers roll up a lot of points. I think there's going to be a tough, tough go for them.
Well, what was the game in Minnesota last year? 14-13? Was that the final?
Something like that, yeah.
So I think it could be something like that as well.
Rodgers got sacked a ton
a
in
lot.
That game.
Yeah. And that was, you know, that was the opening of that stadium. So that place was off the charts. I think it'll be off the charts again this weekend in terms of noise. But, you know, similar to what we saw in Atlanta, I think that there's an adrenaline kick maybe above the norm when these stadiums open for the first time. Yeah. You mentioned Jordy Nelson and, you know, when we were talking about blocking, but you had a chance to talk to him about this sort of phantom injury that popped up late in the game. What did he have to say about that?
So it's a back injury. It's officially a back injury. And, of course, he doesn't like to talk about injuries at all. I think it's something probably a pain issue. It could be the back of his rib cage or something like that where he got hit. I think he'll play. I don't think it's debilitating, but I think it's something to watch. If he takes a wrong hit, if he has to reach high for passes, that could be a little bit of a problem. I'm interested to see how they cover him too. You know, whether they put Xavier Rhodes on him or they do that to Davante Adams. I'm going to write about that later in the week, so I won't touch on it too much. But, Nelson is, I don't want to say questionable, but how effective he can be if that thing is really bothering him, I don't know.
It's a really good question. And, I'm sure you'll talk about this a little bit in your story later this week too, and so we can touch on it. Maybe in tomorrow's podcast or after the game, but you know his expertise now is essentially in a much smaller, his repertoire is smaller than it was, you know, before I got here in 2014. So that's something we can discuss more in depth. But the things that he can do are not as wide ranging as it was just, you know, 2-3 years ago.
You're talking about Nelson?
Nelson, yeah. I mean, he doesn't, you know, the speed to take off the top of the defense, all the different things. To me, he's sort of I don't necessarily mean this in a bad way because he's exceptional at these things, but to me he's kind of become a two-trick pony, which is red zone and zone coverage. Mm-hmm. He kills both of those things. He's not going to beat you deep. He's not going to beat you with speed. He's certainly not going to beat you with yards after the catch. So I don't know. I don't know what his effectiveness will be, but boy, if Davante Adams can play like he did, you know, after a concussion like that, you know, with another week under his belt, I think he should be ready to go.
Well, I am interested to see if the attention shifts to Adams, and if it does, what that means for Nelson, because he's had all the attention over the past couple of years. I also wonder whether he's beat up a little bit, whether that thigh injury that he suffered against Atlanta has been bothering him, because he does not look like the guy last year who could just run for days. We really haven't seen him beat anybody deep. He's won on slants. He's been good in, you know, he's such a good route runner.
Yep.
He's still going to get open, but he's lacking that explosiveness, and I wonder if he's hurt.
So let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball a little bit. And you wrote an analysis piece in Wednesday's paper about Clay Matthews and sort of the ways that he has been able to influence games this season, if not necessarily from a pure statistical standpoint.
Yeah.
Now, I was not here for the days of Clay Matthews lining up at right outside linebacker every single play and going after quarterbacks, but it seems to me that those days are over, not in that he can't do it, but that he's being applied in so many different ways now. Why did that topic jump out to you?
Well, what struck me was how they used him. It was just on 11 plays during the game. They used him as what you would call a stack outside linebacker in a 4-3 defense. And essentially that means that you're off the ball at about inside linebacker depth. And you kind of shift everybody on the defensive line shifts over. So all of a sudden, Dean Lowry is like an outside linebacker. Mike Daniels is next to him in what would normally, he's in the middle, would be nose tackle, but he's actually in a three technique. And then Kenny Clark's there over the nose. And then you have Ahmad Brooks or Nick Perry next to him. So it's a 4-3 defense, what really what it reminded me of why I've said that Matthew should be an inside linebacker. You know, I wrote that earlier this year, is because he can cover and he can close on receivers.
He's so good in coverage.
Yeah, I mean, he punishes people who come across the middle. And he basically took Jason Witten out of the game at a time when the Packers really needed that. And I still think you can credit him for that interception for Randall, even though he didn't touch Terrence Williams, but he was there, and Dak Prescott saw him and fired that thing away from Matthews, and that's why it kind of went rifled off his hands, off Terrence Williams' hands. Clay Matthews is not the same player he was the first 5-6 years he was in the NFL. I don't think you can just line him up outside and get 11.5 sacks every year. But he's still versatile enough. He's still able to affect the run game. He can still cover. He can still, you know, move across the field. He can still blitz. I think you gotta use him everywhere. And you have enough pass rush with Nick Perry and Ahmad Brooks that you don't have to line him up outside every single time. And the more they use him in different places, the better off they'll be, I think.
So now that begs the question of how likely is that, you know, diversification, how likely is that to continue? Because, I mean, with the way that Martinez is playing and the way that they have to find areas to get Josh Jones on the field, mm-hmm. unless they do what they did in Dallas, there's not a ton of places to put him.
No. And what he did was against a team who, number one, is running the ball.
Yep.
I mean, Ezekiel Elliott had 29 carries. The other thing is that they were terrified of Prescott running on him after a while, and so they played zone.
And Martinez so spied a little bit too, yep.
So Matthews is out there, and everybody is got their face to Prescott.
Sure.
They're not going to want to do that against Case Keenum. They don't have to worry about Case Keenum running on him. So maybe this is the week that Matthews just lines up outside the whole time. But there'll be other, you know, running quarterbacks. There will be situations where they'll want to play some zone. And who's to say there's not? To me, there's also situations where you could play Matthews and Josh Jones in the middle and have Martinez sit on the bench. Martinez played really good against the run, but what about when you need coverage?
No, I agree. And another thing, another reason why I think that 4-3 stack kind of worked in this game too is because Witten is no longer a vertical threat.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get you these underneath routes, these short things, but if you had a Kyle Rudolph or a guy that can actually run, mm-hmm. I don't know that that's as effective, because then you're talking about Matthews, Martinez, or whoever having to track deeper down the field in this zone.
Although I like Matthews running with tight ends. I think he can still run with tight ends. He's physical. He's not afraid to get his hands on them. And he's faster than any linebacker they have, except for maybe Joe Thomas in a run.
I still might take Matthews, honestly, in that race.
Yeah, and I just like the way he punishes people who, if you catch the ball, you're going to get hit.
Right.
And he's gonna hit you.
So let me ask you this. If they were to move Matthews more inside or just use him there more often, does that make life harder for Nick Perry? Because to me, Ahmad Brooks is not the same type of threat that Matthews would be. And so I just wonder if that means double teams galore for Perry, and then you collectively maybe lose a little pass
maybe,
rush.
Maybe, but as long as you have Mike Daniels there, and now the way Kenny Clark is playing, I think you want to keep three guys on two in the middle. I really do. I think you can't afford to single team those guys down in and down out. So Perry's going to get his one-on-ones, and so is Brooks. And you know, even the way they do things now, where they sometimes in that dime, they line up Perry or Matthews inside, stand him up inside, and Mike Daniels becomes an end and sometimes gets one-on-ones with a tackle. So I don't think it would be a big problem, because you still have to account for Matthews as a potential blitzer too.
And I will say this, last year when the Packers were in their pure dime and Joe Thomas was the linebacker, they would oftentimes do a lot of things where Matthews would play the dime position in theory in the middle of the field, and then Joe Thomas would rush from somewhere.
Right, right.
They've been doing that this year with Martinez, and I have to say, I think Martinez has actually looked decent as a rusher at times. He's gotten a couple pressures here and there.
Yeah, he comes full tilt, and his timing has been really,
really
good.
Yep.
He had a couple of run blitzes that were, I mean, perfectly timed, where the guard could not get to him because he was so fast through the ball. I've been really impressed with him. That's kind of what's made my argument a little more specious, is because Martinez is playing so well. But ultimately, I still think you need Matthews in the middle of the field at least some of the time.
So kicking back to the secondary, I think that, you know, there's a chance we might not see Morgan Burnett this week.
He's
dealing with that hamstring injury that did not look good in the game against Dallas. And then he was not at practice at all today, and we didn't even see him. I caught a peek of him inside, you know, doing some rehab stuff. But
I saw him in the locker room briefly.
Okay.
But, he wasn't limping or anything. But those hamstrings, look at Bakhtiari, I mean, you just
look at Mike
know.
Daniels. He had that hip-hamstring combo.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think if they don't have Burnett? You know, how big of an issue is that with the way that Clinton Dix has you know, underperformed to start the year? And then you've got either Bryce or Evans to throw back there.
I don't have any problem throwing Bryce back there and then having Josh Jones as your nitro. I really don't. Burnett is better around the line of scrimmage, but Josh Jones is he seems to be learning the defense pretty well, and he's just such an explosive athlete that you got to have him on the field. You do worry about Kentrell Bryce being deep. He can run and he can hit guys occasionally, but you know he'll miss a lot of stuff too. So that would, if you're Dom Capers, you'd be holding your breath if Bryce is back there. Clinton Dix, I don't know what's going on with him. I don't think he's been terrible. I just think he's had some terrible plays that he avoided in previous. Most of last year, he didn't have a lot of bad plays. I don't know if he's trying to do too much, if he's hurt, if he's, reacting to just always being deep. Maybe he's worried about Rollins and Randall. You know, I don't know. But, he's got to clean up a few things. It'll be interesting to see. Oh, we don't get defensive coaches this week.
We do not.
Yeah, I would have liked to heard what Darren Perry had to say about him.
So, you know, I don't think there's any question that if Burnett doesn't go, they're going to go to Bryce. But am I crazy for kind of wanting to see Marwin Evans there again after he played decent, I thought, against Cincinnati? I kind of would like to see what he can do back there.
I just don't know. One thing about Bryce is that he's pretty assignment sure.
And that is true.
He may get out of position or his angle might be a little bad, but he knows where he's supposed to be. And I'm not sure if that's completely the case with Evans.
Fair point.
I think he can run Evans, and he's much more, what's the word, not fluid, but elastic or whatever, more so than Bryce, who's tightly wound.
I just thought he was really good against the run with Cincinnati. He had a couple of those nice slicing plays in there on Mixon or whoever it was, Hill, into the backfield, and he just showed up more against the run than I thought Bryce has. But I don't disagree with you at all that in terms of reliability and coverage, I think you got to go with Bryce there.
Yeah, I think that's what we'll see. But, a big factor here too is Kevin King and how they play. We don't know. He was not at practice. He's in the concussion protocol.
And we didn't see him, which is generally means they're farther away than if they come out later in practice.
Right. Could mean, or it could mean he went to go see the neurologist and he's near the end of
the
protocol. We just don't know. So, but I do know that they need him. You know, they need him in. He is the steadying influence in their secondary. Weird thing to say about a rookie.
Very weird, but I think he's the most reliable guy they have right now, even over House.
I do, too. I'd put him on the best receiver every week.
Anything else we want to touch on in this podcast? Again, we're going to have another one Friday morning with our regular matchup breakdown, but anything else you want to touch on before we get there?
No, I don't think so. I do want to talk about some matchups and also a little bit about the NFC and where the Packers
stand. Good time
stand,
to do that.
You know, so we should kind of take a look at that when we have our gather again on whatever day it is. I don't know.
Tomorrow. It'll be tomorrow. We'll record it.
You know, I was listening to our podcast on my way up, driving up here, just because I wanted to hear how stupid I sound.
That's bold. I've never listened to one ever in its entirety.
Really? And I'm like, this guy sounds like he's really tired and that he's really out of it. And then I was like, yeah, I really am. Was tired and out of it when we did that podcast after the game.
God. The after the game podcasts are pretty brutal.
It really is.
Because the tightly wound nature of a deadline and then the decompression after you file your story and then you just have been, I don't know, you've traveled, you've seen 3 hours of football, you're trying to process your thoughts. I don't know, it takes me a while.
I know, I'm like, someone slapped that guy, get the words out of his mouth because he's talking so slow, you know. So I'll try to do better after. It's a noon game, so we should be better.
We should be in great shape.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening, and be sure to check out all of our coverage of the Packers on jsonline.com and packersnews.com. Again, we'll have another podcast for you first thing Friday morning. And until then, we will talk to you soon. She's heavenly, a treat for the eye to see.